Hello. You are listening to the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast. We are here to walk with parents on their unwanted journey of child loss, guiding them to a place of hope, light, and purpose, not in spite of their child's death, but as a way to honor his or her life. And now, here is your host, author, speaker, and bereaved parent, Laura Deal.
Hi. Today's podcast episode is being sponsored by myself and Dave in memory of our daughter, Rebecca Deal Howard, or Becca, as most people knew her, in celebration of her April 13th birthday. Becca was always quite spunky, even as a little girl. She could make just about anyone smile or laugh, even when going through chemo treatments at only 3 years old. Her left leg was amputated at that time, but it did not stop her from living a very full and fun life. When the heart damage caused by the chemo got bad enough to need to be put on the heart transplant list, she still had a way of making her many literal life or death hospital stays entertaining and fun for those around her, including the hospital staff who loved her. Becca was always strong-willed and determined to do things her own way, which was always a challenge in raising her, but we believe is also what kept her alive for those last 10 years of having major heart issues. Becca's heart gave out before making it to transplant on October 12, 2011. She is loved deeply and greatly missed by Dave and myself, her siblings, her daughter, grandmother, nieces and nephews, aunts and uncles, cousins and friends, some who have never met her, but they hear about her and they miss her. Happy birthday, Becca Boo. Today, I am happy to introduce you to my new friend, June Collins. June K. Collins is a master NLP practitioner and coach. In 2012, she lost her son, Caleb, and found herself hitting rock bottom and not understanding how to rebuild her life without Caleb in it. During this time, she found a passion with the mind and how individuals react to trauma. Through her own experience and education, she now helps other women rebuild and find purpose in their life and is the author of the book, Mama, You Don't Heal. I know it's been a while since I've had a guest on the podcast, so I am excited to bring June to you. Being surprised at who disappears from our lives has been a suggested topic from you, our listeners, for a while now. So that is what I asked June to chat with me about, and I'm pretty sure our conversation will be helpful. So let's go ahead and get started. Well, hi, June. Thank you for coming on with me today. I am glad for this opportunity to get to know you a little bit and for the listeners to get to know you.
Thank you. I'm glad you had me. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And I see you have a cat.
He jumped on. I'm like, no, not today.
Yeah, mine shut out the door, but she might come pawing. Usually when I close my office door, pretty soon I hear the paw coming on the door trying to get in. So, All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump right in. And I want to start by having you share Caleb with us and tell us your story, please.
Sure. In 2009, I had decided to have a kid. And in 2009, I had Caleb. It was a really complicated pregnancy. So when I was going through it, I had a whole bunch of issues. And then obviously the night that he was born, I actually started bleeding really bad and I had a complete placental abruption. So just because of that, he was special needs. There's a lot that goes into that, but he had a lot of special needs. So we kind of went into life as special needs parents, which is, you know, was fine. It's just a little bit, it's a different turn than you usually have to go. And we started in that. And then in 2012, we had finally gotten into kind of like a routine with Caleb and his doctors and just his medication and just everything that was going on. And we had to do what we call shift work. And basically Caleb, because he was special needs, a lot of special needs kids will wake up several times during the middle of the night. So we had what we called shift work. And so one night my ex-husband was on shift work and I woke up to him screaming. And when I ran downstairs, I asked him, I said, what's wrong? What's wrong? And he said, Caleb's not breathing. Mm. And my mind at that time was just kind of like, the only thing I could think of was like, are you serious? That's like what I asked him. And he said yes. And anyway, I went downstairs and I called 911 and went downstairs, started CPR on him. And I did CPR on him until the paramedics arrived. And after the paramedics arrived, they took him obviously to the hospital. And when we got to the hospital, they said that they had tried to do everything they could for Caleb, but he had passed. And then when obviously the autopsy report, everything came back, they couldn't give us a definitive of anything. All they said was, you know, it was the cause from the trauma he suffered when he was born. And he was like 2 years old, 3 months and 24 days old. So, he was really young, and we knew from his special needs that we weren't going to have him for a long period of time. We knew that the doctors had told us that, but for some reason I had 10 years in my head. So, 2 years, none of us were expecting it that soon.
Yeah. Wow. Now, June, you wrote a book called Mama, You Don't Heal, and you talk quite a bit about, we're just going to dive right into the topic here, about how your friendships changed, which I know is a topic that my listeners want to talk about because they've asked me to talk about it. So now during Caleb's illness and his special needs, it sounds like you didn't have a whole lot of time to put into friendships, but they seem to understand that.
Yes. So when you have a special needs kid, obviously there is a lot that it's a 24/7 care, especially with Caleb and his special needs. And I think that most of my friends understood that, but it wasn't like I say it used to be, you know, it wasn't, we can't go out. We can't, you know, if we're going to go do something, go eat with a family that has kids or anything like that, it's different because we have to pack his bag. We have to pack his feeding tube, his medication. So we tried to keep doing that stuff with Caleb when he was here. We tried to keep doing that stuff because we didn't want to, what I call, hide him away. And I think that sometimes it gets so stressful with special needs kids that, you know, they stay at home, and we didn't want to do that to them. And our friends and family, they understood that. A lot of them were on board with it, but we did lose people that we were friends with. And it wasn't like we didn't like them anymore or anything like that. But I think having a special needs kid anyway, some people just don't know how to handle it. But society, especially in the world, thinks that all kids are healthy, and they're not. Not all kids are born healthy. And sometimes it's a little bit hard to take. So we did lose friends. And I think that's just part of it when you have a special needs kid. But you have the ones that will stick around and be with you no matter what.
Yeah. Now, when Caleb passed, some of these friends that had stuck around through those couple of years, did you find that a lot of those friends then disappeared after Caleb passed?
I had a few of them that stuck around. And I don't, and the thing with child loss, and the thing I always tell all the mamas I talk to, is that, you know, some people just don't know how to handle it. I noticed that, especially people that had kids around the same age, people that I thought were going to stay around no matter what. I just knew they were going to be there for me, and they weren't. And then the people that I just did not expect, you know, I might have been a distant friend to them, or just not a really good friend that I would consider, you know, what I would say, my ride or die person. They stuck around and they were with me. But I also noticed when I was going through all the changes I was going through, because I was dealing with my loss, trying to figure out what I was dealing with. And then for me, I didn't want to be the person I was. I wanted to be somebody more, to do something more. And some of those friends I just lost because I outgrew them. Their morals, their values, their beliefs, they weren't the same things that were important to me anymore. And I think that was one of the biggest things where I lost a lot of people. But then I also lost a lot of people because they just did not know how to handle child loss. They thought that they had to have like the perfect thing to say. They thought that they, you know, they had to do something specific. And you know, as well as I do, sometimes just someone sitting there with you, just so you don't feel alone, is all you need. And they just couldn't handle it. And I've had some of those people come back You know, it's been 12 years now. I mean, they've come back recently within the, I would say within the last 5 years. And just when I talk to them about it, because now, you know, they can talk about it because it's been so long, they're just like, I didn't know what to say. So I just disappeared. And I think for anybody going through trial loss, if you go through that, it's kind of like, well, do you want them to come back into your life or you're not? And that's a choice that everybody has to make on their own.
Yeah, you said a lot of things that it's like bam, 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 I want to hit on here. So
Yeah, go ahead.
if I can remember them all, this is really good. One thing that you said that was really interesting is that a lot of times we think about how our friends left us, but there's also that twist of, do you really want some of the same friends? Because like you said, it's like, I don't know, life is different now. We have such a different perspective. And we want depth in our relationships. We want real in our relationships. And so, a lot of times, maybe even without realizing it for a while, we choose different friends.
Yeah, we do. And I would say now I totally agree with what you said about you want conversations and relationships with depth, not the surface based stuff. And I think that a lot of my new friends have that. And you know, you just change. And I wish I could explain it better than that. It's just you change. And the things that bothered you a long time ago just don't bother you anymore. You know, like the little, they always say, oh, don't let this, what do they say? Don't let the small stuff, don't sweat the small stuff, or what, you know, that saying. And you don't understand it, and then you lose a child, and then you're like, does, you know, me being late for late 5 minutes, or me, you know, my boss getting mad about something that I did wrong this today, is in 5 years from now, is it really going to matter? No, it's not. I'm, you know, I'm just going to brush it off. And you'll have some of those friends that are like that, and you, and I think it's over a gradual period of time. When you see somebody, it's gradual, and you're just like, God, I just don't like the person that they are anymore. We don't fit together like we used to. I think that's a big thing.
And it's almost like you almost have to grieve that in a sense. You know, these friends that you thought were going to be, you know, long term, and now it's like, I don't even think I want them as a friend anymore. You know, and I think that can almost be a grief in its own. I mean, there are just so many other layers that go on top of other things that, you know, life changes that, and friends are one of them. Did you find it important to, because I have a lot of parents, they want to know why these people they thought were going to be in their lives just aren't there anymore. It's like, why aren't they there for me? And, you know, I think you hit on one of them because they just don't know. They don't know what to say. And you also said, especially if they have kids the same age, I think there's a fear, you know, if it happened to you, I don't want to think about it happening to me, kind of a thing. And did you kind of have that sense of wanting to know why, or was that kind of easy for you to, it really doesn't matter why, they're just not there?
Oh, it bothered me. It really bothered me at first. And two of the people I had worked with for a really long time, and we were that ride or die. And I'm in law enforcement, and they were my partners, and I just knew they were going to be there for me, and they were not there. And it bothered me for a really long time. And I think that's one of them I work with now again, but it bothered me for a long time. But I got to the point where I was like, I just got to let it go. And it's kind of like when you hit that point in your child loss, and you're like, I don't want to live like this anymore. I'm going to change. And you make that decision that this is it. That was kind of the same way for me. I was just like, you know what? I just got to let these people go. And then obviously when he came back into my life, when my partner came back into my life, I was like, hey, what happened? You know what I mean? And you know, that's where I got to, like, you know, what happened? What were you thinking? You know, and I'm trying to get the answers that I wanted to know years ago, but I didn't know. Another thing too is I've noticed with family and friends, everybody's grief is different. Like I surpassed my mom in climbing the ladder to try to move forward in my grief, where my mom, even though it wasn't obviously it was his her grandson, but my mom stayed in the dark grief until she passed away. You know, so I think you have that aspect of it too. Like, your grief might be different than your friend's grief. Like, your friend cannot, and you hear it all the time, because we get it all the time. It's I don't know how you do it. And I'm like, well, thank you. You know what I mean? It's like, well, thank
it's like,
you. For
yeah, I don't
that,
know how
you
know? I do it either. It's not like I have a choice.
yeah, that's like, I don't have a choice. I have to do it. But you know, I think that's part of it too. Is like they grieve for your child as well, even yes. though they're not the mom or not, you know, or not the dad, but they're grieving for your child too. As a friend, they're grieving for your child. And I think that's sometimes some of it too.
And I think a lot of times they're grieving for us. Mm-hmm. They're grieving for both of us, because they see how dark it is for us, and they see how much pain we're in. And it's, especially for a grandparent, it's like a double whammy, because they've lost their grandchild and they've really lost their child too. And they don't know if their child's going to come out of this okay.
Yeah, I think my mom said it best while she was still here. She said, I lost my grandchild, but then my child is hurting and there's absolutely nothing I can do to make it better. And I thought that was like the perfect thing that she said, because, you know, not only she's missing her grandchild, but she's also her child. She can't help her.
Yeah.
And I think
and we all know
that's
a horrible
hard.
Feeling when you can't help your child.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, think about your child, you know, and you know, when they're sick, when they're hurt, when they break their arm, when they, and Bella, you know, hurt her foot the other day, you know, it's just, there's nothing you can do. And I thought that was a hard part.
Yeah. Now, when your partner came back into your life, or anyone else that has eventually come back into your life, how easy was that for you? Did you have to work through some things yourself? Was there like some forgiveness, you know, that kind of a thing that you had to work through?
I don't think there was a forgiveness for them. It was, I wanted all the questions answered that I had. Like, why did you walk away? You know, why did you do that when, you know, we trusted each other with our life, you know? Well,
so it was
why?
Like more of getting an understanding.
Yeah, I wanted all the questions answered. And I think that was my big thing for it. And I was guarded when they did come back, I guess you could say, because I was like, well, you left. I don't know if I need to trust you. You know what I mean? Like, do I trust you as I did before? You know, because when everything hit the fan, you were gone, you know? So I think there was a trust issue there. And then I wanted all the questions answered. Like, what happened?
Mm-hmm. So when you get those questions answered, did it kind of satisfy you, or did it still just kind of leave an emptiness there, just because, okay, now I know, but it still doesn't change the fact that you weren't there?
Yeah, I had them after it was like, you know, I have an understanding, and I love psychology and the mind and stuff and just the way people react, but I have an understanding of why you reacted the way you did, but it still took a while before I could trust and be close with that person again, you know, and have that close friendship and that bond that we had, and that, I say, partner bond. It took a while, but at least I did have that understanding.
I'm one of those people that... I almost make an assumption that people should know what I need if they know me, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially at the beginning of the grief, we don't even know what we need, much less someone else knowing what we need. So one thing that I try to help bereavers, especially in those early years, is it's okay to let other people know what you need. You know, when you have people say, oh, just let me know if you need anything, that's so generic. Have you found that too, that we really need to reach out and let people know what we need?
Yeah, I tell women the same thing, because it's so funny. Like, we don't need anything. Like, there's absolutely nothing nobody can do for us at that point in time. But we also don't want to feel alone. Mm-hmm. And the things that we want people to do for us, we feel, I think scared might be the wrong word, but we just don't want to ask for it. And I tell the women I talk to, just like you, you know, if someone says, you know, what can I do for you? Tell them what you need, because they don't know. They're going to do absolutely anything you want, but you just got to tell them. And down here in the South, like, they don't know what to do for you, so they bring food, you know, like
right, right.
we had tables and tables of food, and you know, they come and they sit at your house, but maybe that's not, like, I was one of those closet, I call it the closet griever.
Yeah,
I
yes,
didn't want anybody
yes.
around me.
Mm-hmm.
But people were just coming and coming and coming, which it means a lot to me that they thought that much of me and my ex-husband. But you know, I just didn't want that. But I didn't have the voice at that time to tell them what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to hurt. I was still in that phase.
I know.
Too,
we still
know
think of everybody
there.
Else,
I don't,
don't
hurt
we?
Anybody.
Yeah.
I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. You know, they're coming to do, you know, give me their thoughts and their, you know, support and everything. And I don't want to feel like I'm being mean,
or
and
being
I don't want to
rude.
Hurt their feelings. Yeah. And it's
oh
like,
my goodness,
if
yes.
you don't want to just tell them, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they'll do anything for you.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, those practical things, you know, can you take my car out and put gas in the tank? Can you do the load of laundry for me? Can you run my kids to school for me this week? I mean, just some of those things that, I mean, we're in survival mode at the beginning.
Yeah.
And anything and everything is such an effort. And
yeah.
so it's okay to ask people to do some of those things for you, even, or maybe even especially if you've been used to being so independent and doing everything yourself. It's okay to need other people and to lean on them. But I think it's important. We need to let them know what we need, because I mean, I'd never lost a child. I had no grid for, I mean, I'd never lost a parent, even a sibling. So
yeah.
I had no grid for this at all. And so, you know, other people around us, they've never lost a child. They're not going to have a knowledge of how to help us or what we're going to need. And so when someone offers, it's okay to take them up on it. And if you think of something later, a week later, a month later, 3 months later, if someone said, you know, if you need something, call me, let me know, it's okay to try to lean on them a little bit.
Yeah, I think with child loss, you know, we always feel alone. And I think it starts just like you said, like there's no one around us that's going through it. There's no one that it can possibly feel what I'm feeling. And obviously, once you get into loss more and you're going through the motion, I call them the motions because I was in such a fog for such a long time.
Yeah, I call it being on
you're going through them.
autopilot.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, oh, well, they lost a child. Oh, well, they lost a child. Oh, well, they lost a child. And I think that's another big important thing with all these friends and family that are around you. There are some of them there that have probably lost a child and you don't even know.
Yes.
Whether it's before in the womb or whether it happened years ago and they just don't talk about it, because everybody, they do things differently with grief. Some people talk about it, some people don't. So I think that's an important thing to point out too, is that you're not alone. There's more people out there, and you know, don't think that you're alone.
Yes. Yeah. For me, I didn't know anyone who'd lost a child, and there weren't any groups in the area to go to. And even if there was, I had the thought that if I got with other parents who had lost a child, it would just be a big boohoo fest and I would leave feeling worse than when I went. And so the first time I went to something with other moms who had lost children, it was actually the opposite. It was wonderful being around other moms who got it, who understood that darkness. You know, if I needed to cry, I didn't have to explain myself. Or if we were laughing, we didn't have to feel guilty about it, because we all, you know, we all knew there was that undercurrent of grief. It was okay to laugh. And it actually ended up being wonderful to be around a bunch of people who were a mess like me.
Yeah, I think that's a great, great thing to have. And I waited a really long time before I even did
yeah,
that.
I went
Because
about 3 years.
Yeah, I'm naturally an introvert. So I was like, I am not going to meet a bunch of people and be in a group and have to feel something. I just didn't want to do it. But it is there. It's a bond. And it's like they're your tribe, and I call them your tribe. And I know that some people are like, why do you say that? But it is. It's a tribe. And even though like all of our loss is different, we still know, like you said, that darkness. I mean, it's there. But I think another thing too is like for family and for friends and everything like that, when you lose a child, obviously they think it's the worst thing too. And they think, they shouldn't be laughing, they shouldn't be going out, they shouldn't be doing all this stuff. And I ran into that too, and sometimes that laughter or that, just going to get something to eat or just doing something that's maybe something that you never do, that helps you, and some people, friends and family, will not understand that. So I always caution people about that too. Do what's going to make you happy. And if those friends and family don't like it, then it's okay too.
It's okay because they don't know what it's like.
Oh yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, I find it interesting that other parents who've lost a child, we'll have someone come up to us and say, "Oh, I know how you feel because I lost, my grandma and she was like a mom to me," or, something like that. And it's interesting because one thing that I've discovered is that most of the time it's very rare for a bereaver, even if you've lost a child the same way, for us to say, "Oh, I know how you feel because I've lost a child." We don't really say that because we know it's so personal. I know the suffocating darkness I was in, and I know it takes everybody under, but I don't know exactly how you feel because it was different for you. The relationship was different. I mean, it was, I find that interesting that we don't usually say something like that.
No, we don't. And I try to look at it too, just because I try to look at it from everybody's point of view. But I think that those people that say, I lost that grandmother, or I had, I feel what you feel because your grandmother, your some people pets, some people are really crazy about pets. I am too, but they're crazy about
Not
pets.
yeah.
I think it's that is the worst trauma they've ever experienced. So that's all they know. And I try to look at it like that, as like they couldn't know what we're going through, because they've never experienced it, and I'm the type of person, I try to take what they're saying and look at it from both sides and kind of brush it off, because if you don't, some things some people say, just I'm like, gosh, why did you say it? You know what I mean? Just like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that,
They're really just trying to equate their worst pain. And yeah, that's how they're trying to relate to, my worst pain and your worst pain. So have you found that a few of your good friends now are other bereavers, people who've lost children? Have they become some of your best friends?
I would say my closest friends right now, one girl, she lost her child at 24 weeks. And I actually knew her before she knew Caleb. And then obviously she was there with the special needs of Caleb. And then she was there for me when Caleb passed away. And then then she got pregnant and lost her child at 24 weeks. So I was there we were there for each other. And then the other close friend that I have actually has a son that's special needs. And then I have just other people that I consider friends that have lost children. A lot of them have lost them after me, because it's just been so long. But I always make it a point that, like, we had a guy that lost his child last year that I work with, and I made it a point to get in contact with him about it. Or there was a lady the other day that lost her child a year ago. And I got in contact with her. So I think that's kind of how you gain all the friends that you have. It's just a bond. I can't explain it other
It
than
is.
it's just like a
It's kind of
bond,
like when you find out someone is a believer in the Lord, and it's like there's an instant bond there. I think it's the same thing when you find someone's lost a child. There's just an instant bond, an instant connection. It doesn't matter what their beliefs are and anything else. It's just like there's a connection. There's a bonding that is just there. That, like you said, it's really hard to explain. Have you found that some people who were not in your life when you lost Caleb, but they've come into your life later, and then when they find out you lost a child, do they seem to have more grace for your grief? Because there's a continual undercurrent of grief, triggers, you know, the rest of our lives. Do you find that some of those people actually have more grace for your grief than people who were there when you lost Caleb? As in, they think, why are you still dealing with this? Shouldn't you be past this by now, kind of a thing? Is that something you have experienced?
I haven't experienced that, and I'm lucky I haven't experienced that. Now, I have experienced the people that just don't, they don't know what to say. They don't want to, like I used to tell my Josh, I was like, you know, I was like, you can talk about it because it's with me every day of, you know, every day, or when, you know, his death day or his birthday. I'm like, you can talk about it. Don't worry. I didn't forget, you know?
Yeah.
And I do a lot of things by jokes because I've found that it's easier with the people that have never experienced it. If you can kind of like, you know, get them laughing, just like something like that. I'm like, it's okay. I didn't forget, you know? But I have a lot of people that have come in and they're just like, oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry. You know, they just don't know what to say. And it's kind of like
it becomes
a blank.
Awkward.
I've been lucky. Now, when it first happened, I had people trying to set a time frame on it. Like it should be 6 months and a year. But now the people that I meet, they don't at all, you know?
Right.
And then, you know, if they ask me, you know, hey, you know, what's wrong today? Oh, well, it's Caleb's birthday. Caleb's birthday was March 20th, or his death date was March 20th, excuse me. You know, and they're just like, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm like, no, it's okay. And, you know, we'd go on our day or whatever. But I find that they say they're sorry and they don't know what to say, kind of like at the beginning. But they've never told, I'm lucky no one's ever told me that you should be over that or insinuated it, because I don't think, there's very few people that will come right out and say, you know, oh, I can't believe you're not over that, or I've never experienced that.
Right.
Thank goodness.
Well, it's interesting because it seems like for a lot of us, the people who were with us when it happened are the ones that seem to put the timeline on it. And the people who met us later seem to have more understanding of, you know, like you said, oh, I'm sorry. And just they're okay with it. Even though it's been 10 years or whatever, you know, it's like, oh, I can't imagine losing a child. I'm really sorry. So I find that interesting that sometimes seems to be the case.
Yeah. I think the weirdest comment I usually get from people is the comment we already talked about it earlier. Is just like, I don't know how you do it. I don't, you know, and
oh,
I
you're so strong.
I'm like, shucks, you know, but in that comment's kind of, that's the only one that I get that I'm just like, well, you know, we can't help it, you know? And it's kind of, you know, I try to make a joke about it because they don't know. They don't know what to say when you say that, especially if they had absolutely no clue coming into it. And you're just like, oh, and they give you the question. How many, you know, do you have kids? Yes, I have kids. How many kids do you have? I have two. I have an angel son. Or I say, I have a son that gained his angel wings in 2012, and I have a daughter. And they don't, some people get it, some people don't. And then when they ask me, oh, well, how old's your son? Well, he passed away, you know, when he was two. And then they finally get in, and then it's a weird conversation there.
Yeah,
but
yeah. It's funny you brought that up because I just had an email just within this last week of a mom talking about she lost two sons within a month of each other. And so she has a daughter still here. And unfortunately, they were both, she lost them to suicide. And so that makes it even more awkward and difficult to talk about. And so her question was, you know, what do I do when people ask me how many kids I have? Because then the questions keep coming and I can't answer these questions. What do I say? And, you know, so I did send her back an email. It's so fresh for her still, you know, to even just say something like, I have three kids, two of my sons are no longer here. It's still really fresh, and I don't like to talk about that right now. You know, it's kind of end it that way. And I also suggested, and then changed the subject to like, hey, how long have you lived here? Or where do you work? Or have you heard about this new restaurant I'm thinking about going to? You know, just change, have a question in mind that you can just change the topic, get it off of there so that the awkwardness doesn't kind of hang there. And then this other friend of mine that emailed me, and she said, I like to, you know, mention my child that passed and then the one that's still here and say, and she's, you know, and just go into, you know, how old she is or what she does for a living or, you know, whatever, so that it's just kind of this brief mention. And then the view and the thought and the topic of discussion is on my child or my children who are here. And so, you know, just kind of to think about and pray about how to answer that before you get caught in that awkwardness, because that can really take, it can really jolt you the first time you're asked how many kids you have.
Yeah, I know. I know when I first was going through loss, and I didn't know how to deal with it yet. And people would ask me, do you have any kids? And Caleb was my only child at the time. And I would just tell them no. And that
And
got to
that would
me
break your
so
heart, wouldn't
bad.
it? Yeah.
Yeah,
Oof.
it would break my heart. So I had to, for me, I had to figure out a way, how can I say this where I can say that Caleb, that I did have a son, because it broke my heart when I said that, and I felt like I was doing him wrong. So anyway, that's where I came up with, I have a son that passed away in 2012, and my son had gained his angel wings in 2012, because I couldn't live with myself if I had to deny my child. And I made the mistake at first. I made many mistakes, when I started my child loss journey. So, that's one mistake I did. So, and just so your mom, you were talking about with the two sons, always figure out what's going to work for you, that's going to be able, where you can get through it. You know what I mean? Where you can get through talking about it, even if it's only brief. But yeah, don't do what I did. I denied having children.
I did that one time because Becca is the oldest of five. And there was one time I said I have four kids, and it was like, never again. Never again will I
Yeah,
say that.
I
I
couldn't
can't
do
do
it.
it. I can't do it. So she's still my daughter. She may not be here with me, but she's still my daughter. So, Well, June, I think it's time to wrap this up. But I have really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your heart and your experiences and sharing Caleb with us. So, how can people connect with you and check out your book?
My book, the easiest place to tell you where my book is it's on Amazon. All you have to, Mama, You Don't Heal, and you can pull it up. And then anybody, I have several different social medias. I have a group, it's called Women Surviving Child Loss, and that's on Facebook, and that's a private group. There's about, I think there's 1500 women in there right now. Great women, all of them have lost children. Just kind of a group. I call them the tribe of women, just going through it. They're all in different places in their child loss. Some single lost a single child. Some people lost multiple children. It's just a great group. We do like a little program in there, and then obviously Instagram and TikTok and all LinkedIn. You can find me by just June K. Collins. You'll be able to pull me up.
Okay, and you have a website? What is that website address?
Well, you can go to my website, lifeafterchild.com, or you can also link to it by the serenitydreamer.com.
Okay, and I will put a link to that in the show notes. So if people want to just click on the link, they can go straight there. June, do you have any last thoughts to share with the listeners?
Just to keep going and to make the first step. The first step is just realizing where you're at and that you don't want to live like that, even if you don't know how to do it. Or, how hard it's going to be, or what you're going to have to do, just make that decision that I'm going to be better that next day. And then after that day, I'm going to be better than I was the next day. And just go at it like that, and just small baby steps towards it. But make that first decision that, you know what, I'm going to try to figure this out. That's
And
the
even if you
most
think the
important
next day
thing.
is, you tell yourself the next day is going to be better and it's not, that's okay, because sometimes we do feel like it's like one step forward, two steps back. But you just, like you said, just keep going and you will get there.
Yeah, and and I'm talking baby steps. Like if you're in bed all day with your pajamas on, okay, today you get out of the bed and put regular clothes on, and then the next day you take a shower, and then the next day you brush your hair. And it's different for everybody. So I mean, just baby steps. It doesn't have to be something extravagant, but just so you can say, yeah, I'm better than I did better than I did the day before.
I had someone email me and say, tomorrow I'm going to wash some dishes. And I think she said, I have a sink full of dishes, but I'm going to wash 20 dishes.
Yeah,
That was like,
but it's just that little step. That's so you can say, you know what? I am doing better because I did do the dishes today, or I
That's
did
right.
whatever it was, that little thing that you did. That's all that matters.
Well, thank you so much, June.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Isn't it nice to know that even when we lose friends, sometimes they come back into our lives? But even if they don't, God will not leave you friendless. There are others who will come into your life who you weren't expecting. And I hope you consider me as one of those friends. I am excited to finally be able to announce another GPS Hope and Healing Retreat, which is going to be happening this spring. It will be in Ohio on May 24th through the 26th. Now, there is room for only four couples and four moms coming on their own. And I will let you know that one room for the couples is already booked and one of the beds for moms is already taken. This is going to go fast, so be sure to check it out right away if you're interested. Find out more about this at gpshope.org/retreat, and I will also put a link to that in the show notes. Now, if that doesn't work for you, consider coming to our stomping grounds here in South Central Wisconsin the first weekend in August. We are having a weekend of hope, which is a time for Dave and I to minister to you directly, sending you back home more prepared for this unwanted lifelong journey. It's a chance for us to meet you face to face, which I would love. This is in conjunction with our big Celebration of Hope dinner that Saturday night to acknowledge that Dave and I have been doing this for 10 years now, and the dinner is included in your weekend. You can check this out at gpshope.org/weekendofhope. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And if neither of those work out for you, check out the grief cruise, okay? I know it may sound strange putting grief and cruise together, but it is incredibly wonderful. And if there's any chance possible that you could go on that, it is in February of 2025. You can check that out at gpshope.org/cruise. And I will put a link to that in the show notes as well. So hopefully one of those three will work out for you. Let's go ahead with this week's birthday segment. Greg London was born on April 8th and is forever 34. Becca Deal Howard was born on April 13th and is forever 29. We celebrate, as always, the day these children came into the world, and obviously this is my celebration day of Becca. If you would like to have your child's birthday announced the week of his or her birthday, I would be honored to do that for you. Just go to gpshope.org/birthdays. Submit that form. Make sure to fill out the pronunciation. If your child's first or last name sometimes gets mispronounced, because I do want to say it correctly for you, just submit that information, and I will add your son or daughter to the birthday segment the week of his or her birthday. Dave will also send you an email to remind you to listen that week. Today's episode was sponsored by Dave and myself in honor of our daughter, Becca. If you would like to sponsor an episode in honor of your child, go to gpshope.org, hover on the donation tab, a menu will appear, and just click on sponsor a podcast episode. Now, this is only $50. Your child will be remembered, not only for those who listen to the episode when it comes out, but for years to come as new listeners go through the archives, which many of them do. Plus, it does help the ministry of GPS Hope keep going. Okay. One last thing before closing this out. I do want to let you know that if you get June's book, Mama, You Don't Heal, there is some stronger language in it occasionally that you don't hear from me. And I know many of you are okay with that, but I just wanted to let you know. I know losing friends we thought would be with us in life through thick and thin can be very painful. We do have to get to the point where we accept them, June says, as MIA, missing in action, and let them go, knowing that there will be others who will become just as precious to you as you continue this painful journey. Some of those will be the ones who help you find a way to keep your child's memory alive with building them a legacy, which brings me to something I want to read directly from June's book to end today's episode with. After the funeral is over, I want you to stop thinking that it is the end, because it is not. It is the end of your child passing, but it is the beginning of their legacy. Their legacy lives on within you and will never be forgotten as long as you keep their fire burning. As you often hear me say, just keep going one day, one hour, one breath, or as June says, one baby step at a time if that's where you are. This may feel like the end in many ways, but it isn't. You can get through the worst of the painful darkness and live a life of meaning and purpose again, not in spite of your child's death, but because of his or her life. And like I said, I hope you consider me one of those friends. And remember to check out the May retreat, the Weekend of Hope in August, and the cruise, because I would love to be able to be your friend face to face. So as we wrap this up for today, as always, remember to hold on. Pain eases. There is hope.